Capital Investment Committee hearing for March 13th is called to order. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for March 11th, 2024?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Chair Lee moves approval of the minutes for March 11th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 11th are approved. Members, today we'll be acting on two bills. House File 3631 is the modifications bill to previous capital investment authorizations, and House File 4763 is an agency bill. We will also be hearing presentations on the Governor's 2024 bonding recommendations for the Public Facilities Authority, Department of Health, Pollution Control Agency, and Minnesota Historical Society. At this time, Chair Lee, would you like to move your bill, House File 3631?
That is my motion, Madam Chair, to have the bill re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Chair Lee, there's a DE amendment coded A24-0217. Do you move the DE amendment?
I do, Madam Chair.
Chair Lee moves the DE amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the DE amendment is adopted. Chair Lee, you have an author's amendment coded H3631A5. Do you move the A5 amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. I also move the A5 amendment.
Chair Lee moves the A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the A5 amendment is adopted. Now that House File 3631 is in the form the author desires, please explain your bill, Chair Lee.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is the modifications to previous appropriations for both general fund and GO bonds. And so just going quickly over, I'm not going to read through everything, but as you can see, we have modifications there for appropriations for Barnesville, Douglas County, and we did fix this, Representative Franzen, in the A5 amendment. Thank you for the heads up. We have the Carlstead Airport, the Chincada Trail for Plymouth, the request from the City of Big Fork Community Center, Bloomington Public Health, Brooklyn Park Community Activity Center, Wake Park Quarry, Avenues for Youth, Eastside Neighborhood Services, the Lower Phelan Creek Project, changing spelling the Phyllis Sweet Community Center Project. We have a change for Somali Museum, the Southern Anoka Community Assistance Center, the Special Guerrilla Units Veterans Museum, Mound Clean Water Infrastructure, Morrison County, the Museum, the Cross Lake National Loon Center, Carver County Facade 18, and then the remaining are for the GO bonds. We have corrections in there for Eagle Bend High School, corrections for Olmsted County Trunk Highway 14, Alexandria Roomstone Community Center expansion, and then these are the extension, and so this will be Alexandria. We have the Minneapolis Outdoor Performance Venue, and then the Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water System. And then we also have in there some corrections for that we have received from MMB too. And then the A5 amendment just add on additional projects that we were able to receive after, you know, having this bill posted last week. And I think, you know, for committee members and for the public too, if there are additional requests, I will ask for people to have it run through the granting agencies first. And I think we have another opportunity to make additional changes in Ways and Means. And with that, Madam Chair, open to questions and discussion.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Any questions from members? Seeing none. I'm sorry. Leader Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Franzen is looking for her bridge culvert project. Can anyone help her find where it is?
Madam Chair and Representative Franzen, I think that you're looking for the date change for the Runestone Community Center expansion, correct? So the underlying language that extends it is in the DE on starting on line 9.17, and the extension is changed from December 31st, 2026 to December 31st, 2028 on line 15.16 of the A5 amendment.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could staff also point me to the correction for the U.S. Highway 29, what line that is? It should say State Highway.
Yes. So those amendments to the Douglas County section are, they start on line 2.33. It strikes U.S. and puts in marked trunk. And there is another instruction on line 3.1 that removes the other references to U.S. Highway.
All right. So thank you for your help with that. And then
Representative Franzen.
Oh, sorry. I very rarely talk in this committee. thank you, Madam Chair. So thank you, staff. And then also thank you, Representative Lee, for Chair Lee, for indulging me on my corrections. Thanks.
Leader Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And correct me if I'm wrong, Chair Lee, but if by some chance something is missed today, either in here incorrectly or not in here that's expected to be, that can still be adjusted as we go through the process.
Chair Lee.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, that is correct. So we will, like I have mentioned before, request any language changes to be approved by the grantee agencies and MMB first, and then we'll consider that as we move into Ways and Means.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Lee and staff, for making the corrections for Chancata Trail for Plymouth. It was intended to be that way when we passed it last spring, and I'm glad we were able to get it. We're getting it corrected now. Thank you.
Okay. Chair Lee, any clue? You had a question. I thought you were just commenting your equipment was fixed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I just address the fact that something's wrong here? And, you know, maybe somebody could fix this at some point. I will survive now, but just let you know that we have an issue.
Duly noted, Leader Dahl. Did you have another question?
No.
Okay.
Who can fix?
Well, the live entertainment is over. Chair Lee, any closing statements?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
I'm so sorry. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Lee, and maybe I missed this, but is there any correction in here that is not a capital investment correction?
Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen, for the questions. Right now, we don't have any. I know that there are requests outside of our jurisdiction that are seeking for modification, namely, I think, projects that were funded in the transportation bill, you know, the Carlstadt Airport, and then project that was funding in the jazz bill, the South St. Paul Library. And so we're still under discussions with the Senate to see if we could include that in here as we move forward.
Representative Zhang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Lee, for including language in here that includes the St. Paul Common Rec Center, where we know the Santa Foundation operates. So I'm very pleased to see that this language has been included, and to Ms. Nash, too.
Chair, anyone else? Chair Lee, any closing statements?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Look forward to the committee support.
Chair Lee, do you renew your motion that House File 3631 is amended as referred to the Ways and Means Committee?
That's my motion.
Chair Lee renews his motion that House File 3631 is amended to be as referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and House File 3631, as amended, is referred to Ways and Means. Chair Lee, you have another bill on the agenda today, House File 3763. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 4763 be recommended to re-refer to the Ways and Means Committee.
There are no amendments, Chair Lee. Please explain your bill.
So thank you, Madam Chair. This is a request from MMB and the Governor's Office to push out the report here from January until February, and the intent for all of you is to have this as a vehicle bill should we need it in Ways and Means.
Any questions? Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, Chair Lee, do you renew your motion that House File 4763 be referred to Ways and Means Committee?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Chair Lee renews his motion that House File 4763 is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and House File 4763 is referred to Ways and Means. Thank you, Chair Lee. We will now move to state agency overviews of the Governor's 2024 bonding recommendations. We'll start with the Public Facilities Authority. Welcome to the committee, Director Freeman. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members. Sorry about that. My name is Jeff Freeman. I'm the Executive Director of the Public Facilities Authority. The Public Facilities Authority, the PFA, is the state's infrastructure bank for water infrastructure projects. And the PFA, PFA finances most types of municipal wastewater and drinking water infrastructure projects in cooperation with the Pollution Control Agency and the Health Department. PFA projects include replacing aging infrastructure, both pipes, treatment plants, as well as all of the other components, water towers, lift stations, all of that. Projects improve systems for better service and efficiency, upgrade treatment facilities to improve water quality, and extend service to meet existing needs. But the only thing we don't fund is new development. The PFA funding process or framework starts with all projects being ranked by the Pollution Control Agency or the Health Department on their project priority lists based on water quality and public health criteria. The PPLs list are basically a five-year pipeline of projects that are cities seeking construction funding. The current 2024 clean water project priority list, which is wastewater and some stormwater projects, 299 projects for $3.1 billion. The 2024 drinking water priority list is 884 projects for $2.4 billion. There's a lot of work that needs to be done around the state. These are cities, big and small, throughout the state. The next step in the process is cities request placement on the PFA's intended use plan when the projects are scheduled for construction. And you have in your packets the full lists. I'll talk briefly about those later, but just to summarize, the 2024 Clean Water Intended Use Plan contains 102 projects for $832 million in requested loans and other funding. The loan portion of that, these are in our fundable range for loan funding. In some cases, grant funding is not available, and I'll talk more about that. The 2024 intended use plan for drinking water is 157 projects for $739 million. And then the 2024 drinking water IUP also has a separate list for lead service line replacement projects. Our first dedicated intended use plan for lead service line projects. 64 projects right now for $104 million in requested funding. We'll talk more about that in a minute. PFA, as I mentioned, provides financing to cities of all sizes. Low-interest loans are broadly available to projects in the fundable range, and targeted grants, and I'll talk more about the programs to do that, but grants are targeted based on affordability and specific project types. Just to provide a little context, over the past 5 years, the average annual PFA funding has been over $250 million per year. The majority of that is the PFA's low-interest loan funds, $201 million on average over the past 5 years, and you can see the grant funds there as well. In total, since the inception of the PFA in 1989, we've made loans totaling $4.4 billion. Each $1 of state match has leveraged $15 in construction and $3 in interest savings due to the low below market rate interest rates for these loans. PFA has three main programs. The first and largest is the Clean Water and Drinking Water Revolving Funds. These programs, these loans are available for all types of PFA-eligible projects. They're supported by federal capitalization grants, annual federal grants, plus a 20% state match. The loan repayments revolve back to make new loans and pay off PFA debt service for the revenue bonds that we have authority to sell. The federal funds also include some principal forgiveness grants that are available for disadvantaged communities and green infrastructure. Then there are two grant programs that supplement those loan funds. The first is the WIF grant program. WIF grants are help cities replace aging infrastructure that would otherwise be unaffordable. The goal is to reduce the risk of major system failure, and the grants, because of the affordability criteria, tend to focus on the smaller communities because they do not have the user base to generate sufficient revenue through their enterprise funds to operate, maintain their systems, and do the capital improvements they need to do. So that is the real target for that WIF grant program. WIF grants are packaged with PFA loans, also with, we do some matching grants with USDA Rural Development that also has loan and grant programs that focus on small rural communities. Next is the Point Source Implementation Grant Program, the PSIG program. That program helps cities upgrade their water treatment facilities to improve water quality by meeting more stringent permit requirements. Eligible projects include projects to treat specifically for pollutants like phosphorus, mercury, chlorides. There are others as well. Only the project components that are related to providing that increased level of treatment are eligible for the PSIG grants. And then, as you know, we have a new program. The Lead Service Line Replacement Program was created last year by the legislature to deal with the problem of drinking water lead service lines. The health department estimates there's roughly 100,000 lead service lines in the state. Our first intended use plan, as I mentioned, has 64 projects in 42 cities for $102 million. Many of these projects are right now preparing for bidding and construction start this summer. The resources for the program, the state appropriated last year $240 million. 10% of that is used by the health department to help cities do inventories of their lead service lines. And then there's federal funds through the IIJA over the next 5 years, roughly $200 million. The number moves a little bit, but though, again, significant funding specifically dedicated for that service lines with 10% available for the inventories that cities need to do. This is a challenging, has been a challenging program to develop, and we've been working hard over the past year to be ready for these, this first major round of projects this summer. One of the challenges is that the ownership of lead service lines is split in most cities between the private portion and the public portion, and that presents significant financing challenges that we've been working through. Also, of course, cities don't always know where the lead service lines are, and that goes to the inventory question, that before they can replace them, they need to know exactly where those lead service lines are. And so that's part of the process of doing those inventories, and health department is providing assistance to cities to help them do that. Overall, between the federal and the state funding, the state program combines those funds to replace the lead service lines at no cost to the property owner or to the city. The state has set a goal of having all lines replaced by 2033 and having that combined effect of federal and state money with no cost to the property owner or cities. That's a major factor in being able to move these projects quickly and meet that 2033 goal. The governor's 2024 bonding recommendations for PFA is a total of just over $109 million. The first request is for state matching funds for the Clean Water Drinking Water Revolving Funds, $39 million, will unlock $196 million in federal funds between the last 2 years of IIJA, as well as the regular base funding that the PFA receives for the state revolving fund programs. The WIF grant program, $23,485,000. The Point Source Implementation Grant Program, $18,527,000. And then there is a new program that is proposed for emerging contaminants. The governor recommends $18 million to get that program started for, right now the initial priority is on manganese treatment, but very quickly there'll be projects for PFAS, treatment of PFAS substances, or removal of PFAS substances. Health Department will talk more about that shortly. And then another $10 million investment for the lead service line program. The governor's policy recommendations also include, or its governor's bonding recommendations also include some policy items. The first is the creation of that emerging contaminant grant program to assist cities with construction projects to address those manganese and PFAS. The program will be administered in conjunction with the health department, utilizing the drinking water revolving fund process. State funds will be combined with approximately $120 million of federal dollars through the that is dedicated to emerging contaminants through the federal IIJA. The governor also recommends increasing the grant caps for the WIF and the PSIG grant programs. The recommendation is to increase the WIF grant cap to a maximum of $10 million from the current five, and the PSIG program to a maximum of 12 from the current $7 million. Finally, there are some changes to recommended to authorize within the state revolving funds, authorize clean water principal forgiveness grants for projects to address emerging contaminants on the clean water side, the wastewater side of things. And that's requires some creative thinking and some work. The Pollution Control Agency is looking and exploring ideas for how those funds could best be used. One of the things that they're looking at is using those funds to provide treatment for leachate from landfills, pretreatment, I should say. There's also a proposal to authorize drinking water or principal forgiveness to help cities deal with maximum contaminant level requirements. A few small communities, small projects around the state have issues with arsenic levels, radium, some of those issues, and these grants would be targeted to those projects. To give you an update or a view of where we're at so far this fiscal year, you can see at the beginning of the fiscal year, July 1, the funds that were available for the PFA clean water programs, the amounts that have been awarded and the amounts that are reserved. PFA under the funding process, we do not make a funding award until a project is ready to start construction. So the awards we've made, those are all projects that are already under construction. The cities, when plans and specs are approved and certified by the health department or the PCA at that point, we then are reserve the grant funds and loan funds to while those projects work through the kind of the final steps of coordination and preparations for bidding and construction start. And that's what that those reserve projects or reserve column of funding, those projects will be underway for construction this summer. And then finally, the drinking water program, similar list of where funds are at currently this fiscal year for drinking water loans and grants. Also in your packets, as I mentioned, you have copies of the full PFA funding lists, and they're get a little complicated. I'm happy to answer questions at any point, but basically what you have is the 2024 intended use plan list that lists out the projects eligible for PFA loan funds, as well as estimated funds for the various grant programs that I mentioned, some other funding as well. Projects that you see that have a shaded row all the way across have been awarded and are under construction. Projects with, in some cases, some of the grant funds that are listed, you'll notice are in a lighter font and an italics font. That means that those grant funds are not available. Those cities are eligible for grants, but the funds are not yet available. Hopefully, with the additional appropriations this year, those more of those projects will be funded. You also have breakout lists for the WIF and PSIG programs that provide more detail for those programs. Again, you'll see a shaded row when projects have been funded. You'll see shaded cells when grant funds are reserved, but the project's not quite yet ready for construction. You'll also see the a column for the USDA Rural Development matching grants through the WIF program, and you'll be able to see what cities are there eligible for those grants as well. You all included also as an alphabetical list of the full five-year project priority list that if you're wanting to look up particular cities, that's a good resource to have. And finally, the drinking water intended use plan also has a list of those specifically lead service line projects, the 42 cities and 60-some projects that are gearing up for construction this summer. I will stop there. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director Freeman. Questions? Lee Durdall.
I'm not going to touch this. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Director Freeman, and thank you for all the fine work you've been doing over the years. I just have a couple of maybe general questions and a little more specific. So in the last year, with the capital investment bill appropriations and the federal money, how much total came in to PFA?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I should have that number. The appropriations for PFA programs was just a little over $200 million, as I recall, for the loan program, the two grant programs, and then the special appropriations for individual projects. My recollection is that was about $299 million. It was more than the amount for the PFA programs. So roughly close to $500 million total.
Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director Freeman, thank you for saying that, because that's what my math was coming out with as well. On your first, just to make sure I understand, the darkly shaded areas are in the fundable range?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, the projects you see with the shaded column all the way across are funded since the beginning of the fiscal year and under construction right now. Those are funded projects.
Leader Dahl.
Thank you. And Director Freeman, but there are other projects that are not underway but are eligible to be funded.
Director Freeman.
And how are they identified, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, if you look at those WIF and PSIG lists, in particular, those grant program breakout lists show the funds that are awarded and reserved, and then a little below that is a dotted line, basically, that shows how far the current funds could reach. So with last year's appropriations, we were able to fund all of what we call the carryover projects, the projects that were had their technical plans and specs approved and certified by the end of last fiscal year. So all of those are now fully funded with respect to PFA loans and grants. Not all have been awarded yet, but the funds are available. And then as we get into new projects on this year's intended use plan, the new projects that haven't yet received the plan and spec approvals, but we've started to calculate those estimated grants, that's where you'll see a dotted line. The current funding does not go down very far onto those new projects, so there is a need for more funding.
Leader Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director Freeman, in the past, you've given us the point numbers and the range of that, you know, they are eligible, like, you know, up to 150 or whatever it is. Do you have that for these, like the Clean Water Project Priority List? What numbers are eligible?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, the easiest way to show that is to, because each program has sort of a different fundable range. So on page 7 of the packet is the wastewater WIF grant program breakout list. And as I said, it shows the funds that have been awarded and reserved, and currently that dotted line for the new 2024 projects comes down to roughly project number 11 on the priority list of the new projects. Hanley Falls, I believe, is where I'm seeing that line. So again, so PFA funding follows the priority list, but we also follow a readiness to proceed. And readiness to proceed is dependent on projects having their plans and specs prepared by their consulting engineer and then getting those technical documents approved and certified by the health department or pollution control agency. So that's, once they have that certification, then that meets the milestone for readiness to proceed, and we're able to start reserving funds to the extent the funds are available.
One more.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Director Freeman. And just one more question, and that is, in light of all the funding that you received, like nearly $500 million, are you able to spend that in one biennium, or do you have money left over at the end of the biennium?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, of the PFA program funding, about $200 million, as I recall, that money is either all spent or committed to projects, and that's what those lists show you with the shaded rows and the shaded cells. Those are the funds that were received last session, as well as the federal funds that are available for those purposes. And all of those funds are now awarded or committed to projects that are presumably would be ready for construction this summer.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Freeman. I jotted some questions down, and I should have been following along, but out of the total dollar amount up to 2033, that's the goal, right, for fixing lead, are you dividing it a certain percentage every year, or are you trying to do as much up front, and then how are you dividing that money up?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Scarba, our plan is to fund projects as soon as cities are ready to go, so we're not holding anything back. We're going to fund as many projects and cities as are ready to go. There are, as I mentioned, 40-some cities on the current list. We are starting to take now requests for next year's list, which I expect will be more. We'll continue to fund those projects with the funds that are available. I fully expect that between the federal and state funds, we will be able to fund all of the projects for at least 2 to 3 years. And it really kind of largely depends on how quickly the cities are ready to go with these projects. But our plan is to fund all of them and as much as possible have the funding ready when cities are ready to go with their projects.
Madam Chair.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Director Freeman. So you're anticipating first couple, 3 years, we have enough money, and then if there's not enough, are you going to, or what's the plan? Do you have a plan?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative, just like with all the other programs, we look at the projects in the pipeline and prepare our capital budget requests based on what we see as the needs for the coming 2 years, and so we will continue to do that and request more funds as they're needed.
Representative Scraba.
Madam Chair, I got your humor too. That's good. In the pipeline. Yes. One of the comments you had, you know, you're going to remove the PFAS. What's the plan to remove the PFAS? Do you have technology for that? Is there technology? Madam Chair.
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Scarba, that's my colleague here from the Health Department will be able to talk more about that. I'm just the money guy.
That later?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, also,
Representative Skraba.
There's WIF and PSIG. Where are the extra dollars coming from? And I think it was the health department I wrote down. I don't know why I wrote that in there. Is there extra dollars coming for WIF and PSIG?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, the governor's request funding request for WIF and PSIG. I think I mentioned there's also the federal dollars, and specifically, well, lead for sure, lots of federal dollars, but also the emerging contaminant program. There is dedicated federal funding, some of it through the PFA's Drinking Water Revolving Fund. Some of it is through a separate program administered by the health department for small and disadvantaged communities, specifically to help with those emerging contaminants. So it's a combination using all of those different sources together under the proposed program.
That's it, Madam Chair. Thank you, Director. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director Freeman, I think first question is more just understanding your current policy. So as we travel across the state, community asking for direct appropriations are saying that, you know, the request from the state is about half. PSIG is the other 25, and then other programs that we're funding as the other matching funds, so that they don't really have a contribution at the local level. And so what is your policy right now? Do you count those as matches of the sources of fund as a, you know, PSIG, for example? Is that a non-state match or not?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, the PSIG certainly is state funding. The way the PFA funding framework works is PSIG grants and WIF grants are only up to 80% of eligible costs. So there's always some additional costs beyond what those grants can cover. And the PFA's loan funds, which is a mix of federal, state, revolving payments, all of that, but the loan funds, every project that we fund with the programs has a loan component to it. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
A little bit, but let me reframe it. A community is asking, and if they're awarded a PSIG grant, you know, the 80%, full 80%, like you said, the remaining 20, and they're coming to us for direct appropriations for that 20%. So does that factor into then if that's, you know, that remaining 20% is coming from the state? So do you cut back on the potential award for the PSIG or not? Do you still go forward with the 80%?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, the PSIG program is not affected by any other funding. So those grants are 80% of the eligible cost. As I mentioned, eligible costs might not always be the total project cost, but whatever other funding will not change the amount of the PSIG grant. However, on the WIF program, because that's an affordability-based calculation, if a city does have additional funds from state appropriation, federal appropriation, some other source, that does factor into the overall calculation of that WIF grant, and the WIF grant would be smaller than because of that.
Chair Lee.
Madam Chair, so just with that response then, is it possible for a project to receive full state funding through direct earmarks from us and the funding programs that you have at the PFA?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, yes, yes.
And so, members, I'm asking that. I think that that's something that we should revisit. You know, we should set a standard across all funding programs that, you know, similar to what MnDOT, you know, last year when they came by, we talked, and they said that, well, if a project is receiving state funding through a direct appropriations through this committee, that that's the state share, and that's the standard that they have for projects through the MnDOT Local Roads and Bridge Program. And I think that that's something that we should consider here, too, where we should not be funding for the entirety of the project. I think that it makes sense for us to help, but it is concerning, you know, when we're asking for direct appropriations from here and, you know, getting full funding from the other piece too. And then just moving on regarding the intended use plan here. So I'm looking at one project that just stood out, Fridley Lift Station. So for the Fridley Lift Station, they are estimated to receive a loan of $1.6 million. And so doing the math, there will be a remaining $61.128 million for that project. Who's responsible for the remaining $61 million of that project?
Director Freeman.
And this is on page 4 of the IUP.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Lee, so that Fridley Lift Station, I believe, is that's a Met Council Environmental Services project. So we will be providing full funding for that, but with Met Council projects, they have so many projects in many in different phases. We provide funding based to Met Council based on the roughly 1 year cash flow needs for each of their eligible projects. I believe there's 20 some eligible Met Council projects. Those dollar amounts that what you're looking at is just the amount that Met Council has requested to meet their one year cash flow needs for that project. We recently made a loan in total for about $42 million. We do a loan every year for Met Council that funds a range of projects, and then those funds are divided between all of those separate eligible projects that you see on the list.
Chair Lee.
So, Madam Chair, so this Fridley Lift Station, the $62 million project, and so throughout the entirety of the project, it will be funded through PFA loans, you're saying, and that local communities don't have to make a contribution to that then?
Director Freeman.
Yes, absolutely. Madam Chair, Representative Lee, the PFA will be funding the total costs through loans to Met Council, and so there is no direct, there is no additional cost to the city of Fridley or other users.
Chair Lee.
All right, Madam Chair, I guess last question so that we can move on. And so just to the questions about capacity, since we did ask the Met Council last weekend when we met, I brought this forth too, and just want to put it on the record. You know, the Met Council said that they came in with a low request for INI because of the capacity of the contractor community here in the metro area. And doing the math, similar to what Representative Erdahl said, over $500 million, most of them are in for the direct earmarks, most of them are not in the seven county metro area. And so is that a concern for the PFA that we may not have the capacity in greater Minnesota to take on those appropriations that we passed in the 2023 dollars, or is that not a concern?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Lee, we certainly have seen an increase in bid costs. I mean, obviously there's a lot of projects in the pipeline. The demand has increased. Federal infrastructure bill, lots of state money. So all of that does put pressure on the overall construction industry. Contractors are working on gearing up. I know that LIUNA, the union, is working on training more workers for the construction industry. Consulting engineers are hiring people. Everybody's gearing up. We've certainly seen rising costs, but we have not seen a situation where a city advertises for bids and doesn't get any bidders. That would be a real concern, but we haven't seen that. What we've seen are some rising costs, and that's to be expected.
Quick comment, Madam Chair. So, you know, I think that as we make a decision as a committee on how much we put into INI, how much we put into the PFA, I think that that's a consideration that we should not be, I guess, afraid that we don't have the workforce or whatnot. And if we use that as a justification for why we don't want to put funding into INI, then I think that we should make that same consideration for what we put into the PFA programs and vice versa. And so just wanted to put that, you know, out there for us as we continue to move forward in putting a budget together. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We have four more people on the list, so we'll keep moving along. Representative Hansen.
You know, after several years of trying to press this point about using a different criteria to actually do what other states are doing for both the federal money and the state money, you know, and being told, oh, you don't need to worry about reaching underserved communities because we'll just take care of it. Here we are in the IUP on these programs, and I just think we probably need to rename the Public Facilities Commission to the Greater Minnesota Public Facilities Commission.
I'll second that.
I think I'm serious, because this is not going to the seven county metro area. It's not going to communities that are poor. You put a token project in every so often. But we were told on the lead service lines that, oh, if your communities have done the inventory, they're going to be in the list. Nope. So we either have to have parity by statute to get these projects and programs that are supposed to be for the whole state. So if you're in a metro area, you're going to get a loan, and your property taxpayers are going to have to pay that loan. But if you're in Greater Minnesota, you get free money. And as Chair Lee said, then you come also back to get an earmark. So there's no cost. This is very interesting, the data here, because I'd encourage everyone to really look at it and see what the results are.
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to point out as I mentioned, we just did $42 million loan to Met Council. We do a loan of similar or more size every year. That loan was less than 2%. I don't remember the exact interest rate, but significantly better than even AAA-rated Met Council could get on their own. There is significant interest savings there. We are, the city of St. Paul is rebuilding their McCarran's Lake drinking water treatment plant. That is a $200+ million project. PFA is financing the majority of that. You can see those numbers on the list. So we are providing significant funding to metropolitan cities.
Those are loans. Everybody else gets grants.
Anything further, Representative Hansen? Thank you. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I knew I'd have to follow up after Representative Hansen go next here. So my question to the testifiers there, Mr. Freeman, I'm looking at the Clean Water 2024 project priority list here. And obviously there's a lot of projects here. I see there's one at 299 on priority. My question is, what is the cutoff? Is it like 1 through 50? Is it number 200? Could you give the body an idea of what we're looking at here?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Franson. So on the drinking water list, we fund projects all the way down to 7 points on that priority list. There are some projects ranked below that. We unfortunately can't provide loans for everyone. But the top three quarters of that priority list, those projects are all in fundable range for loans when they're ready to go to construction. On the clean water list, the wastewater list, the cutoff is 40 points. Again, we can't fund everybody. We can't fund the projects below that, but the vast majority of projects are in the fundable range for low-interest loans, and the majority of projects that we fund, both outstate as well as metro area, the majority are loan-only projects using those low-interest loans and the lending capacity that's been built up in those revolving funds.
Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Freeman, so could you just walk us through here? So you're saying you go off of the points, And then, so I'm looking, and I think you said 7 points?
Yeah. Director Freeman?
Yes.
So,
Madam Chair, Representative Franson, so on the clean water list, it's 40 points. So if you're looking at that.
Yep, I'm looking at the 40, at the clean water.
Mm-hmm. At that alphabetical list, and I don't have the whole PPL in rank order, but you'll see it on the intended use plan where we are funding projects this year, eligible projects that are down to 40 points. Projects below that are not eligible for funding, but the majority of projects on the overall five-year project priority list are above 40 points and are in fundable range.
Representative Franson.
One final question, Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Freeman. How many, if a city is on the PPL list here for points, what is the average amount of years it takes for a project to get funded if they don't have enough points?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Franson. So the projects that are above those cutoff lines that I mentioned, the 7 points and 40 points, the city's, the time frame is up to the city. We'll fund the project whenever they're ready.
Got it.
The lower ranked projects, these are, the ranking is based on public health and water quality. So they're, it's not like they get additional points. The longer they've been on the list, they move up. It doesn't change in that way.
Representative Franzen. Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair. And to our testifiers, I have a couple of questions around the water infrastructure programs, and something that we heard a ton as we went on our tour, and I know across Minnesota we're facing obviously a housing crisis. We talked with many communities that want to expand their tax bases and adding businesses and new housing, whether that's affordable or workforce, but they can't because infrastructure constraints and capacity is at their maximum, and the financial challenges of paying for that. I'm curious if you can help us understand out of the buckets of funding here, say you want to add a multi-unit family or a community wants to add more housing capacity, are these funds available for things like sewer and drinking water and stormwater? Is there a particular one geared towards housing infrastructure or businesses to be able to tap into that for communities?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative, not directly. We finance a lot of projects to replace aging sewer and water pipes, and those can be then, in some cases, resized based on projected growth and needs. So that's something that we do fund, but actual new sewer lines, new water lines to connect new development, whether it's multifamily or single family or a business industrial park, we do not fund those projects. But the treatment plant is sized to accommodate growth whenever we do a project. The growth projections are done for 20 plus years of design life, as well as the pipes, the sewer collection systems, the drinking water distribution, the pump stations, and all of that is all sized based on a projected 20-year growth.
Thank you, Chair. And I appreciate that response. And so when you're working with communities, is that a requirement that they look at their growth plan, or is that just something that you build into your process in terms of making those projections and how, whether you resize or extend and those types of things?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's part of the technical review process that our colleagues at the Pollution Control Agency and the Health Department are looking at those plans and specifications and the planning projections that go into that. That's part of what they are looking at.
Okay. Good. Yeah. And one more follow-up, Chair, if I could.
One more.
In terms of, are there federal dollars to maximize that our bonding committee can be looking at how to maximize that growth capability for communities? And then I'll just note that I obviously we're up in Duluth. We appreciate everything we've done in terms of with the PFA funding, and I would be remiss to say that I see Duluth in the lead service line in greater Minnesota, and we say Duluth against everybody, but I would just echo that when we look at the loans of $42 million for Met Council, for example, compared to the amount that went across the state for lead service lines, you know, really looking at geographic equity and racial equity and making sure that we're holding true to what we said that we would when we passed that bill. Thank you.
Representative Scraba, you're good?
Go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Director. I'm sorry. Leader Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, Representative Hansen, I want no misunderstanding. You know, I certainly am in favor of the metropolitan area getting their fair share of this funding. Perhaps it would be helpful, Director Freeman, and if maybe you just want to send it out to us or what, but the criteria by which you establish how the ranking is done for these projects. Is that possible?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, so the ranking, those scores that you see on those priority lists are done by the Pollution Control Agency and the Health Department based on public health and water quality criteria.
Okay.
The criteria that PFA uses, the affordability criteria that's been discussed, we are looking specifically at the costs for each city to operate, maintain its system, and do the capital improvements that it needs to do. We're looking specifically at the costs and the number of users that the community has to pay for those costs through their enterprise fund.
How about one follow-up?
That's what this is. Thank you, Madam Chair and Director Freeman. So cost per city, are you talking per capita cost or total cost to city?
Director Freeman.
Madam Chair, ultimately we're breaking it down to an average per household cost, and that's what really determines the WIF grants is that average per household cost. In the metro area, based on Met Council's survey of wastewater, that cost, the last time they did their survey in 2022, I believe, was $377 a year, which is just a little over $30 a month. For the cities that are triggering WIF grants, those per household costs are easily over $50, $60, $70 a month or more. They're 2 to 3 times what they are for an average household in the metro area. That's what really drives that affordability need for those WIF grants. Without the WIF grants, those cities simply would not be able to afford to replace those aging treatment plants and aging pipes and would be at increased risk of some kind of serious major system failure without being able to have those additional resources.
Thank you. I think that's helpful.
Thank you, Director Freeman. Next up is Department of Health. Welcome to the committee, Supervisor Kolstad. You've been very patient. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representatives. My name is Chad Kolstad. I'm the Infrastructure Unit Supervisor at the Department of Health, as well as a licensed professional engineer. So I'm just going to basically expand on the programs Director Freeman talked about earlier, specifically the Emerging Contaminant Program. And the Lead Service Line Program, and I'm just going to get into a little bit of detail specifically on the inventory portion of that. So as the existing emerging contaminant program sits now, as Director Freeman mentioned, we have about $120 million to work with for emerging contaminants. All those dollars pass to the Drinking Water Revolving Fund, And basically they go to systems that have had a health risk advisory exceedance. So if they exceed for PFAS or manganese, they get a letter issued by the Department of Health that basically says, you have this in your water, we're encouraging you to do something about it. There's 128 systems on that list right now, primarily manganese and PFAS. Basically what that letter, to build on a little bit more, is that water systems are required to basically, they're not required to react, but MDH works with them to minimize the exposure from that contaminant in hopes that as they can, to kind of buy them time to get the funding in place. There's way more projects in the pipeline before than there is funds available. So just wanted to point that out. The current funding breakdown is for 50% of the eligible project costs for these projects with a cap of $3 million. So that's just using the existing federal dollars that both Public Facilities Authority and MDH have. These projects typically are for treatment or well relocation. And to touch on an earlier question, the treatment is available for PFAS. It's typically granular activated carbon or ion exchange. So it is available. Sometimes there is pre-treatment necessary in front of that ion exchange or carbon treatment. It depends upon the situation. What the proposed grant program is just to basically expand more resources to the existing program. Same thing, follows the same process, goes through the, they have to have a health risk advisory issued to them. It's just now partnering the state and federal dollars to get that grant up to 80%. These can be very expensive projects. They're a public health concern, and it just needs to be addressed. And then the cap would be at $12 million. So that's just a real quick touch on the emerging contaminant programs as they exist now and as how they're proposed. And then I just want to give a little information on the lead service line program, specifically lead service line inventories. So as you've heard Director Freeman previously mention, we're getting about $40 million a year for 5 years from the federal government from the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. Last year, the state provided $240 million for additional funding for the lead service line replacement program. Those funds can be used both for inventory assistance, so 10% for inventory assistance, which MDH is managing, as well as lead service line replacements. Just as a little reminder what a lead service line is, it's the line that provides water from the water main out in the street to the meter in the house. So this is what we're talking about. It's buried infrastructure. It's hard to know what that material type is. So that's one of the big challenges with lead service line inventories. As of December 16th, 2021, EPA finalized the lead and copper rule revisions, which basically require all systems to complete a service line inventory by October 16th, 2024. As Director Freeman mentioned, we're estimating about 100,000 lead service lines across the state. As we're starting to get some inventory information in from systems, we're expecting it to be possibly higher than that. To assist with the inventory assistance, we basically did a master contract with 18 consulting engineering firms across the state. The general idea is that these are firms that are familiar with the revolving fund process. So as they help these systems complete their inventory, they can also help them get on the path to get those lines replaced. So that work has started. We're trying to have those contractors complete that work by this fall and ahead of the October 16th deadline. Once that inventory is complete, either from the contractors or if the systems are completing it on their own, it gets loaded into the Minnesota Department of Health, a combined project with the University of Minnesota and the Department of Health called the Lead Inventory Tracking Tool. So this is a tool you can find more information about on this slide. You can either scan the QR code or go to this website, but it allows residents to put in their specific address, search by their home, and determine if they have a lead service line or not, get additional information about their community water system through their consumer confidence report, as well as communications about lead. I believe there's 18 systems that have uploaded their inventory to this tool so far, and hopefully by the end of the year we'll have all 960 on this tool. And with that, I'd happily take any questions.
Thank you, Supervisor Colston. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative, I'm sorry, Director?
Madam Chair, Supervisor.
Supervisor.
Mr. Colstead's fine.
Okay, Mr. Colstead. I know what I was going to ask now. The increase maximum grant to $10 million, currently $5 million, is that per project? And the dollar amount, those increases, are they part of the governor's proposal built into it?
Mr. Colstead or Director Freeman?
Madam Chair, Representative Scarto, so you're referring to the WIF grant, the increasing the WIF grants to $10 million. Yes, that is part of the governor's recommendations, yes.
Is it per?
It is per project.
Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the emerging contaminants and the lead service lines, do those have affordability criteria?
Mr. Colson.
Madam Chair, Representative. For the emerging contaminants, it's just fixed at 50% of the project cost, up to $3 million currently. The projects are public health projects, so they always rank very high on the system, on the project priority list. So we're able to get funding to those projects fairly easily. Similarly with the lead service lines, there are public health concerns. So regardless of financial need or other indicators, they are able to get funding to those projects because of the public health need.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So will all the critical or the emerging contaminants funding, will that all go to Greater Minnesota and none into the 7th County Metro?
Mr. Colstead.
Madam Chair, Representative, no, we have several projects in the Metro, Lino Lakes, Mound, others, and there'll be many PFAS projects, potentially manganese projects in the Metro that will get emerging contaminant funding.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, and then the lead service lines, will those all go to Greater Minnesota as well?
Mr. Colstead.
Madam Chair, Representative, actually the largest number of lead service lines are in St. Paul and Minneapolis, so the majority of the funds will end up going to St. Paul and Minneapolis. Duluth also has a large share. Just for reference, Duluth is bidding their project this April for
830. One more follow-up, Representative Hansen.
And then what about poorer first-tier suburbs?
Mr. Colson.
Madam Chair, Representative, whatever systems come in as of right now for lead service line replacement, we are able to fund those projects. The biggest challenge is getting the inventory complete. Once the inventory is complete, they can apply for funding. We have enough funding for a few years at least. As Director Freeman alluded to, we'll need more in the future.
Representative Scrava, you had another question?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. You quickly went through the PFAS, how you're removing them. Do you remove them, take them out, store them? You kind of said it really fast, and I was like, ooh, new technology. Please, thank you.
Mr. Colstead.
Madam Chair, Representative. I can go into a little bit more detail, a little bit more slowly. So it's actually, I guess the best way to put it is if you wanted a black box to remove something, PFAS can be removed basically by that black box. It's a granular activated carbon is one of the best available technologies. Mm-hmm. So it's just like your Brita pitcher or anything else. That's what works to remove PFAS. The problem with that is, as you're kind of maybe alluding to, is it does absorb onto that carbon, and you have to treat that carbon or remove the carbon. So once that carbon kind of reaches its absorptive capacity, then it has to be removed and replaced. So the O&M, operation maintenance cost of filter for PFAS is fairly significant. And then once it's removed, it's taken to a facility and it's incinerated. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of studies on whether or not that destroys the PFAS. It has to be burned at a very high temperature to destroy the PFAS. So it's kind of an ongoing concern of what you do with the media.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Colston. Next up is the pollution. Sorry, Chairlee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Supervisor, just to that point about the incineration, do we currently have any incineration of PFAS in Minnesota?
Mr. Kolstad.
Madam Chair, Representative, to the best of my knowledge, I do not know, believe we have anything capable of destroying PFAS in the media in Minnesota.
Chairlee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then we know that when we visited the city of Woodbury, they said they sent their PFAS material to the state of Ohio. Do we know of other projects or other communities where are they sending the rest of their PFAS materials?
Mr. Kolstad.
Madam Chair, Representative, I know many of the systems typically use a certain vendor to kind of manage the carbon changeouts. Most of those vendors are in other states. Even beyond PFAS, carbon's used in a lot of other facilities, and that's usually it gets shipped out to other states for basically reuse, sometimes after incineration for wastewater projects.
Chairlee. Representative Scraba, did I see you? Yes. Have it? Very, very briefly, very please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had sat through a couple weeks ago a Red Wing facility that burns garbage. They're experimenting with burning PFAS, and they have science on it. It's just coming out right now. The day I was there, they were finalizing the report. It's a very expensive, $50,000 for each iteration, and it's something they don't do all the time, but they did it, and they felt they've passed it. So there is some emerging technology coming. I can't promise when it comes out, but it has been looking at it. 1,000 degrees Celsius, 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor Kolstad. Next up is the Pollution Control Agency. We would like to welcome Assistant Commissioner Kadelka and Assistant Commissioner Vanderbosch. And members, we are, if needed, we will be going an extra few minutes, so please plan accordingly. Please identify yourselves for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
And I'm Dana Vanderbosch, Assistant Commissioner for Water Policy and Agriculture at the MPCA.
And no, you're short on time, so we'll go through this pretty quickly here on some slides just to kick it off, a reminder of our mission. It's to protect and improve environment and human health. And this is our guiding principle on how we put together our budgets and our bonding requests, and you'll see that come through. We, as an agency, as a state, are facing very large generational problems, and we're going to talk about two of them here. Because of the work done by the legislature and the administration, we were able to make great steps in 2023, but more work needs to be done, and you'll see that specifically in terms of PFAS and nitrates, which we'll talk about in a little bit more detail. Overall, our request is for $12 million. You can see here a split of $8 million in general obligation bonds and $4 million in general fund requests. And we'll get into more of the details of the two different projects. We've talked quite a bit about PFAS, and I know a couple weeks ago you had a presentation on PFAS, so I'm just going to, again, this is one of our main drivers and challenges here. What makes PFAS so useful in industrial and commercial situations is also what makes it so difficult to remove out of the environment. They are known as forever chemicals and cannot break down in the environment. And because they do bioaccumulate, they are able to be stored in fish and humans, and they create additional problems. So that's where we come up on our first program here. You are familiar with MPCA coming before the committee seeking funds for various types of Superfund projects, including drinking water projects. We really focus on the private drinking water aspect, where you heard earlier Department of Health and PFA work on the municipal drinking water systems. But through our work in various contaminated sites, we do run across situations where we have to address a number of private wells or very expensive private wells. We do have a funding system to address a number of individual facilities, but when we start getting in the circumstance where we have to address a whole neighborhood, which may cost up to $10 million. That's just a little less than our overall remediation budget. So that's why we come to the bonding committee. Instead of coming to you piecemeal, we have put together a program now, which we're referring to as the Statewide Drinking Water Contamination and Private Drinking Water Wells Program. And our request to really is to drive on this is $8 million for general obligation bonds and $2 million for general fund. And the real drivers here are PFAS and 1,4-dioxane. These would be used to, as I mentioned, neighborhood hookups, build deeper wells where needed, or treatment systems, for instance, on manufactured home parks, where we may, there are private wells that are servicing those. And I'll pass it over to my colleague.
All right, the second proposal we'd like to talk about today pertains to nitrate monitoring. Nitrate pollution is a growing problem in several areas within Minnesota, and levels are high across all of southern Minnesota. And the map on this slide really shows a snapshot of nitrate levels within our rivers broken by major watershed, with the higher concentrations of nitrate in the darker purple areas in southern Minnesota. Now, we also know that there's a very strong connection in some places between surface water and groundwater, for example, in the karst region in southeast Minnesota. And so where we see high levels of nitrate in surface waters, we can easily imagine that it will become entrained in the groundwater as well. The MPCA has an existing process for monitoring long-term nitrate trends, so we know where to focus our efforts regionally and by watershed, like you see on the screen. But in order to really locate the key sources of nitrate within watersheds, some of the watersheds are very large, so to be able to really target our efforts, we really need a system that operates at a finer scale and works in real time. The governor recommends an appropriation of $2 million from the general fund to install a network of 60 to 80 real-time continuous nitrate sensors. Partners that we've been working with have asked for this more refined sampling to ideal sources and to target their pollution reduction efforts. And so the locations would be determined through continued conversations with stakeholders and local water managers that we routinely work with. But they'd probably be concentrated in areas where we already know that there's high levels of nitrate both in surface water and groundwater. To add a little bit more context to this request, our current process for measuring nitrate levels involves sending staff out into the field to collect samples from water bodies, and then the samples have to be transported to labs where they're analyzed. And because this process is time-consuming and costly, the frequency of monitoring and the number of sites that we can collect data from is really limited. So continuous data collection will allow us to collect thousands of data points per year as opposed to dozens of data points per year. And in addition, the continuous samplers allow us to work with the data immediately and will allow us to use staff time more efficiently. And this finer scale sampling will help us to better target limited pollution reduction funding and will provide a more complete data set to inform our work on nitrate reduction. And with that, we are open for some brief questions, if needed.
Thank you, Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe this is for Assistant Commissioner Kadelka. Just continuing on with the conversation from the last one, do we have any facility that's permitted to burn PFAS right now?
Madam Chair and committee members, EPA is right now looking at the destruction technologies. As the Department of Health has mentioned, our technologies right now are about removing PFAS or absorbing PFAS from drinking water. And then the ultimate destruction is something that we're still looking at. EPA has some guidance out on this, on the more traditional ways, which is storage in a landfill, destruction with incineration or new technologies. And so we're watching it very carefully. In terms of in Minnesota, as mentioned earlier, we don't have something that destroys it in drinking water media like that. Those are handled in other places, whether it's a landfill or an incineration.
Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there's no current air permits that allow for PFAS burning.
Assistant Commissioner Kadelka.
Madam Chair and committee members, in terms of the media piece there, there are, as mentioned, Xcel Energy, their waste energy facility is mixed MSW waste. So that is a different type of material going in there than, say, the destruction of media from a change out at a GAC, a granular activated carbon system. And so those are facilities, just like there are other industrial facilities that may have PFAS at them.
Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're not currently regulating the materials that the Xcel Energy Center is incinerating now that may have PFAS.
Assistant Commissioner Kadelka.
Madam Chair and committee members, in terms of air permitting, that is not built into the regulatory system on the state or federal level, PFAS, at this time. Those are things that are being built out by both state and states across the nation and the federal government.
Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a final comment then, you know, it's very disturbing to learn that, you know, right now at the federal level, they're still monitoring technologies, but we have facilities in Minnesota that are incinerating materials that contain PFAS. And so maybe Chair Hansen's not here, but I think we should take a look at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any additional questions from the committee? Thank you, Assistant Commissioners. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And we have moved out the Minnesota Historical Society to a future meeting. So thank you to all the testifiers today. Our next hearing is on Monday, March 18th. On the agenda is a continuation of state agency overviews of Governor's 2024 bonding recommendations for Human Services, Administration, Education, with an update on the ARP Capital Project Funds for Community Facilities, Amateur Sports Commission, Minnesota Zoo, State Academies, Perpich Center for the Arts Education. And with that, members, this meeting is adjourned.